Accession number 30021, rail 2.
I think one or two might be still there.
What did you get in the way of leave?
I think every 6 months, you had 10 days. About that, I'm not dead certain. I normally spend, call it 2 weeks, 1 week at Union Jack Club Waterloo, and I work at Mann, Crossman and Paul in Maryland. And the other week I go to Nottingham with my English friend, or Manchester chasing skirts, or whatever it is. I think that was normal. But I always work 1 week, more than that. Therefore, coming out of the Air Force, by the way, if you were in the forces, you could get jobs to pick potato or whatever it is during your leave. And Britain need men. So I normally work 1 week and run around the other week. But although I was normal, an English family, the Seagraves, took me in 15 Montague Street, Bullwinkle. And Mann said, Sam, they've got a shop at Mansfield Road. Do you know nothing at all? Mansfield Road, going up to Mansfield from the north. And they said, we have to get up and go to the shop. So you have to come in for 9 o'clock. The case finished. I didn't go to any dance in Nottingham because girls wanted to stay up late. That was normal, but Mom said you must be in 9 o'clock. And it helped, because after about a month, or whatever it is, no, more than that, Mom wrote to my mother in Jamaica, and my mother was so pleased to get a letter from her mother to say that son washed his face out before he goes to bed. And we are friends even until today. Another family, Chalice, two Renshaw Connor and Mitchum, again we were in the Air Force together. Thank God we are friends today. I took Chalice's daughter to Jamaica after the war and all that. And my children go and spend holiday with them, and they come and spend holiday with us. We were British in those days.
Were you able to have much contact with your family during that time?
No. I think you get one letter per month. Try to remember, those bad Germans wouldn't let ships go. I think it was about one letter per month. You could write one letter per month. And just being said, naturally, the people in the West Indies have an idea. I did not know, but if my sisters told me now and then, that my mother, when the news was bad, when she goes to bed at night, she cries. Not in the days in front of the children. I'm the eldest son. But when the news was very bad, like the bombers bombed the whole of East London. Well, I asked Hawking, they know, she had no bit of geography. You have to overfly Kent to come out Essex to England. And I was in Essex. And if those V2 dropped short, then I wouldn't be talking to you today, sir. And this being said, she used to cry. I didn't know that. Well, actually, she was very glad to talk to her friends about Sam. How is Sam? And especially one or two family always asked how his son. Said, I think he's alive.
Did you feel in much danger?
No. You mentioned that you had difficulty in coming from London Bridge. The first time I was really frightened, I took a troop train from Yorkshire going to Oriff Arkage near Folkestone. And when we got to London Bridge to catch a troop train, the bloody Germans had just bombed the place. I was scared, sir. I was scared, and we eventually they cleared the truck, working night and day, and we got out of it. I was glad to get out of London, and if I could help it during the war, I do not spend holidays in London. Well, you didn't get much holiday. I would spend it on a farm or out of London. No, I don't want to go into London. Can help it.
You were never attacked in an airfield.
Oh yes, shoot up at Oriff Arkage. Not you. They come with snake bombs. And gone, because the creep underneath your radar, by the time the Spitfire take off, and this was going to the end of the war, they shot one or two days. Yes, we have been bombed, but it's sneak raid in my time. It wasn't concentrated like in the 1940 and 42, the sneak raid. As a matter of fact, they were hanging themselves, because once the Spitfire was patrolling all the time, Vector 1, Section that. heathen, and let a good young man die, sir, that we can go to McDonald's again and say, we don't want this, we want that. Young men.
Did you have much idea about how long the war was going to last?
No, but I'll give you an example. When I was in Jamaica, the war was going bad for Germany and Italy. And my father and his neighbor worked it out that the Italians would get beaten and the war would be over. So they spent a lot of money and planted a plantation of bananas. They were 1/8 of a mile long. Now, you're asking me, how do they think the war will? They think the war will over in 9 months' time because the Italians would come out. The Italians did come out, but those bloody Germans carried on. And, sir, the banana came to the total success growing there. But they were rotten in the field. There were no ships. So, yes, we didn't know how long. But most people, after D-Day, realized that we were on the winning side. But let's get this straight. When the Panthers were running in Africa and all that, it was scary. We, Britain alone, could not stop them. The Americans, by the grace of God, the Japanese took it enough to bomb Pearl Harbor. And we get material. We didn't have materials. After Dunkirk, I don't think there were 50 submachine guns in Britain. We left them over the Channel. It's been said that the bandits in Chicago have more submachine guns than we had after Dunkirk. But we survived.
How did you react when you heard that the Germans had surrendered?
Very good. I was at RAF Lock-in near Weston-super-Mare. Churchill broadcast the day before and said 11 o'clock the next day the war would be over. It was about the 24th of May or 25th. And we again was training, but the training was slight now. You know, tomorrow the war would be over. Went to the hangar doing our work, and come 12 o'clock, war is over, 11, so we finish. I was in charge of the hangar, stood to lock up the hangar, rather. And they all left me with a hangar door, and only three of us. And I had to use crowbar and close it because I had the key. Went to the cookhouse, there was nobody there, say it was 12:30. They'd all gone to Weston-super-Mare. Everybody was jolly, everybody. I was happy. I felt that I was going to see my mother again, and I was very happy. I went to the cookhouse, and there were Polish cooks. They were not happy. They said the war was not over because people had occupied their own land. I don't know if the Russians were in Poland. I took a bus to Weston-super-Mare. I got off the bus, and a woman ran out of a pub. I think she was the Red Bull. Whatever it is, a pub by the station, bus station. And said, I'm Jamaican on my shoulder. Jamaican, come on, man, you must drink rum. The war is over. I was about 19 or about 20 or whatever. I don't drink rum. My father wouldn't allow you to drink rum. But she took the hints, and I couldn't talk to her. Everybody was happy, jumping about, and a small glass of rum in front of me and pushed me. And she's gone up and down, I was sipping as sneak out. And later on, I went to Western at the dance on our stadium. It was happy, and I was glad to be alive. And it's hard to explain, I was glad to be alive. And women were crying, they were going to see their husbands they hadn't seen for 2 years, they were in Burma. And people, it was jolly, jolly, jolly. And people cried, especially the women.
How much thought did people give to the war in the Far East that's still carrying on?
Not a lot. If you didn't have a man in Burma and all that, the average woman here thought the war was over. And I think mentally for us, the Germans can't bother us anymore. So whatever is happening there, in a sense, we are safe. But of course, you have women whose husband was in the Far East. And those bad Japanese, did not treat prisoners well. So there was a lackadaisical attitude to the war in the Far East. And we naturally know we're going to win. And I'll give you another example, sir. I was at a camp about 6 months before Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we were talking in general, and a fellow said, well, we'll soon be over, an English fellow who worked with the wireless and all that, because the Americans have a rotten egg. So 6 months before the bomb was dropped, we knew the Americans had a rotten egg. But what they said to us, and don't get me wrong, it was broadcast. But if you were in the wireless, you know people were going to the Far East, you know this, you know something big was happening. But this is, they told me it was a rotten egg. I think it's a little bit more than a rotten egg. Yeah.
What was your attitude towards the Germans at the time?
I had the unfortunate, the privilege, at RA Desmond, to have a German prisoner of war group of about 20, and it's in my book, Jamaican on my shoulder. And I was given these Germans to clean aircraft and to clean vehicles for us to respawn them. Anyway, Fred, the German interpreter, lined them up, and I was to talk to them through him. When the man saw the Jamaican, Scheisen, Scheisen! And when I tell him to move, you know, and he said he's not going. No problem. I'm in charge. If he doesn't go, I get two of them to the guard room. He said, bread and water. And then when I fill out the paper, he will be trying. And Walter talked to him, says, he is in charge. Of course, I'm black. And whether you like it or not. Well, as it worked out, he was a prisoner of war in Jamaica. He was on submarines. The American torpedoed. And he went to Jamaica and they treated him very badly. He said he didn't get enough food to eat. They just gave him coconut oil. Well, Jamaicans don't use a lot of butter in the country. They use coconut oil. And he was not a happy man. Yes. So in short, how did I think about it? I thought them very wrong. Then one or two of them, I remember working with a fellow who speaks English, and he says, how could you go along with a system where people were killed, the Jews? He said, Corporal, I was unemployed, and when they were building the outer bound, I joined the Nazi party. I got a job 2 years after I had a truck, 2 years after I had two trucks. I'm sorry, I'm not interested in what happened to the Jews. I said, well, you're human. He says, Corporal, my family were having a difficult time. So yes, there were a few Germans still. Of course, they were Nazis. They were brainwashed or it's like some British, although the war was over now, or when it's over, they still think they rule a quarter of the world. Rubbish! It takes a little time to adjust. But anyway, how did I think about the Germans? I think they were not Christians. And the irony of it is, some of them think they were Christians. But they were the monasteries. What a lot of rubbish. Jesus says you must be born again, you're on the same level. But no, they say they're Christian, but they're the monasteries. Rubbish.
Once the war was finished, did your enthusiasm for your work diminish at all?
No. You have your pride, and whatever it is. It wasn't so urgent, but you have your pride. And not long after, when I rejoined in 1948, those bloody Russians had Berlin and things like that, and people like Churchill thought the Russians were going to give us a lot of trouble. And things were getting bad. So, and as a matter of fact, in many of our training was high again for the Ruskies. Thank God it didn't work out that way. Yes, but after about 2 years, there was a war footing again. I remember at night, at RAF 10 Lost, we had to work 8 hours, and you patrol 4 hours at night. And I remember in one of these training, it was raining, and the officer said, down, and I couldn't have been down. It was only about a foot of water, and if he says, down, you're down. And when I got up, it was about November, I was cold, and all of them, and all of a sudden, they're going home, and they're going to the bed. Says, no, you do not. And so if the Russians are coming, and you're slow, you're going to stop. And naturally, one or two of us have a cold and all that, but yes, there were giving up for the Ruskies, so you took pride. But whether the war was on or not, you have a pride of your work. Your pride of your work. When you see an aircraft flying a Spitfire, and you know that you have just did a bit of it, there's a certain lump in your when she banks and the sun gleam on her. The pilot might be having it all, but you know what's the book.
In the period between the end of the war and your demobilization, was there any question of you staying on in the RAF?
Oh, yes. I wanted to stay on in the RAF. I was at RAF Desborough. Remember, I was doing a correspondent course. And I went to the educational officer when I learned that the colonies were going back. I said, excuse me, sir, I am doing a correspondent course. I would like to stay in the RAF force. He looked, he said, yes, you are doing a correspondent course, but you're from the colonies. You have to go back to the colonies. I was totally disappointed. I will say this, fellows who were going to night school, a friend of mine, Al Gibson, and who were accepted for a course at the college, they stayed. Of course, they knew what they were doing. They were Kingston boys, they were bright. I genuinely want to learn and want to stay. Well, anyway, he stayed, I had to go back to Jamaica. But I paid my own passage and came back. It was a blessing going home, because having gone home and see the colony, there was a hurricane, earthquake in 1944, just before we left. And the plantations were destroyed. It was extremely bad. And I decided I could vote in England, but I could vote in Jamaica. And I decided that my grandchildren was not going to live in a colony. So I came back. And it was 24 or 25 years before I went back, because my mother was here. And it was a blessing. My mother had 9 of us, and 8 of us came to England. And thank God for the British people. Your quality of life has improved immensely. No, we've got a few acres of land, and we plant bananas. That's beautiful. Selling bananas isn't a problem. And even today, selling bananas is a problem. It's like many farmers here producing things. Then the supermarket buy it the way they want. And I decided if John Bull want bananas, they can lease the land off me or my family, and they go and plant the bananas. Of course, you don't know something about a groundnut scheme, you might. After the war, somebody said they know how to get oil from groundnut, and they spend millions on groundnut. But they did it from textbook. The people in Tanganyika said, no, you don't do it that way. The same thing they did from banana thing in Jamaica. And the groundnut scheme was a failure. But they did it their way.
You were on the Windrush from Jamaica in 1948. What was the atmosphere like aboard?
Once we got on board, we were chief of Jamaicans, 494, two of us. By the way, the ship was a German bin. Very nice, very clean. Not like the Cuba, the water. And after about a week, we settled down and all that. The food was still ration. In Jamaica, we had reasonable food. And after about a couple of days, it was ration. It was hard, very cramped, but we were seeking a living, and the Jamaicans worked together. It was not bad, and I was glad when my foot touched Tilbury on the 22nd of June, 1948, I thank God. I knew once my foot touched England, I would survive. I know it's not easy. I knew there was Russian. I know you hardly could get any way to live, but there's another side to it. I said to my father, I was coming back to England. He said, no way. There was a friend of his, an Englishman who was born in Holland. He says, no, it's cold in England, and you catch cold and all that. And I says, I'm going back. My father looked me in my face and said, yes, you can't go back, but you must stand on your own 2 feet. So when I came back, I could have gone to 15 Montague Street Boulevard or to Renshaw Corner Mission up to my friend. I did not. I rejoined the Royal Air Force from the ship because my father said, I must stand on my own 2 feet. As it worked out, it was a good thing. Because after about a year and a half, 2 years, after a year I sent for my younger brother. After 2 years, another brother. 3 years after, we bought 9 Sears Street, Camberwell. My family was the second black family to buy a house in Southwark. It's not exactly what we want to buy a property. We had to. And today, the whole value of a few pounds.
Was that sense of pride and of principles established, well established amongst those aboard Windrush who were coming to
Yes, the older people like myself, a third were roughly, sorry, discipline, working together. Maybe another quarter I've been to America and worked in factories and all that. They have organizations. The other quarter maybe peasant farmers. They were sad. They didn't know their right hands and nothing from their left. They'd never left their villages and all that. But we worked together and we survived. I remember, because I was in England before, they are coming and ask me, Sam, will I get a job in England? Most people left Jamaica because they want a job. And I said, all right, leave it. About 6 o'clock in the evening after the news, we come down the button and we have a talk. And about 8 or 6 of them will get up. Will I have a job? I said, let's get this straight. A quarter of Britain is being destroyed. It has to be rebuilt. There's no question about jobs. Factories need people. Hospitals need people. It's somewhere to live and ration. So I recommend to them not to come to London, because London was very bad. Was to go to a provincial place. But, and actually enough, I said to them, ration, your food is ration. You're not able to rear a chicken or a rabbit. I didn't realize those people who left the peasant had no intention of rearing a chicken or a rabbit. And it was difficult, of course. I don't know if you're aware of it, about 212 didn't have anywhere to go from the ship. And they were taken to Clapham Deep Shelter. Now, this is Britain. The establishment did not want us here. A week out of Tilbury, the Right Honourable Chris Jones says, there were discussion in Parliament. Don't worry about these people. They're adventurous. They will not stay here longer than one English winter. He actually said that. I repeated that on the BBC 10 years ago. They said no. When the check hands saw, that's what he said. But once we arrived, the church and the people from the Coroner office found a place for us, and we survived. And the nearest, by the way, Labour Street was Brixton. So the Clapham Common, 44-45 bus to Brixton, and that's all my people are there today. It was not easy, but it was a blessing. And I don't have to tell you that immigrants started coming to England after the Windrush. And even today they're coming.
How much concern had you had about how you'd be received?
No, I didn't have any concern. Some of them, they were sensitive. I would say 75% of those people on board, Jamaicans, were Christian. And they believed that it would work. Not by themselves, but by the grace of God. I believe it would work, not by my strength. And 60 years on to the next year, sir, I would say it worked. I have survived. Not by my strength. I've been sick, and women laugh at me. Or whatever it is, National Front, they go back. Of course I did. I didn't tell them that I didn't manage to be quit before they were born. But overall, I am proud to be British, and I'm glad that my grandchildren, I'll show you in a minute, have the privilege of education. My son, as we mentioned, went to Ireland to the minor public school. Sad to say that when he was 17, he thought girls and car was the thing. My daughter was more disciplined. She went to Alexandria University, Egypt, and Urbina University, Italy. She would never have had that chance if I was planting bananas in Jamaica. One of my granddaughters is a head shrinker. She's a clinical psychologist doing her doctorate, and her pictures in there we'll see later. She would not have a chance to study at East London as a head shrinker if I was planting bananas in Jamaica. So I am grateful. I pay a price for it. There are times when you have no dignity. People laugh at you. Let us Christian. It is sad, but about a third of the British people, and in my book it said that, no one told them that they don't rule a quarter of the world's tail. The back of their mind, they think they are sea eagles flying all over the seven seas. Rubbish. The Americans took it over a long time.
How important was the sense of community
Extremely. And without a partnership, you would call it Christmas love, we could not survive. When we arrived, shortly after the very day, it was difficult to get accommodation. We, about 50 of us in Camberwell, got together. We have a partner. Every week you put £2 in and you give it to one person. Now, if you get the last draw, what you call it, that's £100, and the first draw for the next one is £200. And it takes you about 3 years to have that, and you borrow £100, you have a deposit. You know, those £300 could make a deposit. And I would say most, maybe 80% of the older ones had to buy property and we bought them. Today, as I mentioned earlier, those properties valued a few thousand. So we had to work together. Not because Jamaicans do work together at home anyway, but with the difficulties here, we have to work together. Sad to say, my ancestors are my people here, the younger one, of course, they're not Jamaicans, they are black British. Maybe 5-8% of them are a total disgrace to humanity. I mean, to me, and where I come from, you want to kill people, you don't knife them, so you poison them. It's like that Russian myth. If you are sensible, you don't go around knifing people, you poison them. Again, there are two stories about poison in a book. And I'm not talking about it today, it's in the book. And they walking around with knives, they are very stupid, backward and limited. Be like the Russians, poison the people, man.
Was the general sense that the those aboard Windrush and afterwards would try to integrate themselves into society as much as possible? Or was the sense that you would always feel that you were...
No. The fact that we played cricket from day one, your integration, because it's automatic. We were Christians, we played cricket. Our religion, we went to the same church. By the way, the Church of England could have done better. I don't know if you are aware of it. In places like Southwark, there are 30 black-led churches, 5 Baptists, 7 Roman Catholic, and about 18 Church of England. It should never be. But people like me, we went to the Church of England. They let you come in, but you were not. They did not live as Christians. So we set up our own thing. For example, Basil Mead, I have the privilege of working with them and other people like the Seventh-day Adventist Choir. And I was privileged to have 2 Sons of Praise at Suffolk Cathedral when I wore a chain around my neck. And a lot of the gospel rocking that you see on the television, Basil Mead and all of that, I have a rough idea about it, you know, sir. And today, gospel choir is an institution. Okay. So yes, integration. We automatically, in the West Indies, Jamaica, part of the United Nations, is one of the most diverse communities, and we work, live together. I give you an example. In my village, some new people come and say, King, our kings are lies. That's what my name is, Sam King. King, our kings are lies. I went to RAF Kinloss, took my document, gave it to the gentleman behind the desk. King, our kings are lies. Now, I heard that 4,000 miles away. So I asked someone, what is all this about our kings? So I said, don't you know your history? After the Jacobite Rebellion in 1766, Butcher Cumberland hunted the islanders' youth like pigeons. The MacGregors changed their name to King and ran away to the West Indies, to Jamaica. There is a film, Master of Ballantrae, that tells the story. But in my book, that's what I said. Well, the BBC, was it the BBC? No. It's Radio, World Radio, read my book and said, I'm wrong. They took me to Tilbury and they showed me that, yes, after the Jacobite Rebellion, those that were not killed were shipped to Jamaica and they went to the 5 plantations. And I've gotten a list of the plantations they went to and who they were. So the question of me saying that my ancestors or somebody from Scotland ran away is half truth. They were deported or transported. Of course, the MacLeod, the Pattersons, and the MacGregors, they would never tell you that they were transported. They ran away. But if you go to Tilbury, the record is there, sir. of the ships after Jacobite Rebellion and the names of the people. I've got it here somewhere. If you don't, I can show you.